So we're playing. Your plane's low, so we're playing through. Hosted by Bob Alou and Carl Mickelson. Brought to you by the PGA Tour Superstore.
Good morning, Austin, Texas, and welcome inside another edition of Playing Through. We are back on the air after a two-week hiatus. Actually, three-week hiatus, technically. We missed two shows because of Longhorn coverage. 11 a.m. football games boot us off the air in the morning, boot the morning show off the air so you can get your Longhorn football coverage in here on the Horn. But we're happy to be back. I am Bob Alou.
I'm Carl Mickelson. We booted ourselves right back in. Bob, I'm just glad you're not covering a coaching search. So I didn't lose you for 3 weeks in a row. It's good to see your face again. Good to hear your voice. Good to be talking golf again. Hopefully, Austin, the Austin Airways have missed us these past 3 weeks, and we can dive right back into it. I mean, it's
interesting because, you know, the U.S. Open happens at Wingfoot, and we see Bryson's results. And I think that is such a major talking point in golf right now. It's a fun way to come back and start having conversations about golf because, you know, how much will this affect the game? How much will what Bryson's doing change the way guys look at the game of golf? I mean, Bryson has said he is going to take a month off before the Masters, and Carl just gave me the dates. We were trying to remember the exact dates of the Masters because we know it's in November. It's November 12th to the 15th. And Bryson is going to take a month off so he can increase his swing speed over the next month. He wants to get bigger and stronger and faster. And this is going to be an absolutely different way to approach the Masters that almost no one ever has. Now, certainly when Tiger started, they were trying to Tiger-proof courses and do all the things they were doing. That was certainly interesting. But Carl, he's doing things we've never seen before, and there are going to be some holes. Like, I think I heard Jordan Spieth on a podcast with Colton Ose say that on 9T, he's going to have a bazillion-yard fairway because you can hit that drive way left and be fine, way right and be fine. I mean, the whole place is wide open right there. So if he misses, it's not a bad miss as he hits it. So there are going to be some interesting takeaways from what Bryson does when he gets to Augusta.
Yeah, there are some clear advantages, and I listened to that same podcast. It's a great podcast, by the way, from golf.com with Colton Ose. There are advantages for Bryson, and Spieth saying that Bryson basically has to lose it, has to not win it to lose it or something like that. It was a good quote. But essentially saying he's the clear favorite because there's so much he can hit it over. He can hit it well past the bunker on two. You know, if you can get past the fairway bunker on two, the bunker on the right, it opens up. It's just a new way of thinking about golf. Dustin Johnson did this to us to a degree. There's been enough, you know, Cameron Champ. Bryson's got control of that long ball. It almost doesn't look controlled because his body type has changed so much. The swing is on a different path than we're used to seeing with tour players. It looks like controlled chaos, but we're just seeing the control part up through these last few months, including the U.S. Open. He's hitting it past all the trouble. He's hitting it past the Tiger proofing on a lot of these holes. So it's going to be interesting to see if it translates. Because there's so many advantages. Again, nine, you've got what he was saying, it's you've got one tee and then the start of the eighth hole. That is a huge gap. I mean, if you can hit it now, it's not that way for you and I. It's tightly tree lined on the ninth hole if you're hitting it normal human distances. But if you can hit it past where the trees stop and there's just that beautifully mown area that's just wide open and you're only hitting, you know, 100-yard shot or less uphill on nine, it's not that hard. It's a much different hole than having hit a mid-iron to one of the toughest false fronts in golf.
And that's, you know, obviously Bryson has found every advantage. Nobody thought this would work. Nobody thought this would work when he went to Wingfoot. Everybody thought it'd be way too tough. And I think maybe what we overlooked in that, which I do kind of look back on now and say it makes sense, guys struggle to hit fairways at the U.S. Open regardless, right? I mean, you're right or you're left a little bit, and you're in a bad place. The rough mm-hmm. deep. So it's better to be hitting out of a rough deep from 100 yards out than it is from a rough deep 160 yards out or 140 yards out or whatever it is. And I think maybe that's something that maybe all of us kind of – maybe not all of us, but a lot of people overlooked in this is – if he's hitting it further and it's close to the fairway, if he's just in the rough or if he's in the fairway or wherever he is, it's not a hard shot for these guys. They're so strong now that rough, I feel like you could grow that rough to 9, 10, 11 inches now. It doesn't matter. You know what I mean? I mean, it's just there's just so much that goes into it. I wanted to read these two quotes from Rory McIlroy because if you haven't heard, Rory McIlroy is trying to do something similar to Bryson. Now, that doesn't mean putting on 50 pounds and – you know, becoming a maniac and doing, you know, all the things Bryson's doing on that front. But he is trying to increase the swing speed. And he wants to hit the ball further because he said it really was amazing to see what he did at Wingfoot. And here's the quote. Bryson, this is from Rory. Bryson, when he speed trains, he's just hitting the ball into a net. So he doesn't really know where it's going. He's just trying to move as fast as he can and sort of making the target irrelevant for the time being. And then you can sort of try to bring it in from there, right? And then he says, from what I've done and what I've been trying, you know, sort of experimenting with the last couple of weeks, it's the fastest I've ever moved the club and the fastest my body has ever moved. Now, I don't know if this will work. It certainly won't work for everyone. That doesn't mean this won't help Rory immensely. This could be something that changes the dynamic of his game. It is interesting, though, to see where these guys will go. Certainly, you know, like we're talking about that the podcast with Jordan Spieth. Don't expect Jordan Spieth to put 60 or 70 pounds on and try to start launching balls in different areas.
Right.
But you can expect them to try different things to see what works in their own game and see where it goes. I just think all of this is – I just can't think of a time other than Tiger – in the last 20 years when guys tried to completely change their game or completely change their style based on what one guy was doing. And not to say everybody will, but it'll be interesting to see how this goes, you know, plays out over the next year.
We're into that next phase. I mean, so Bryson did the experiment. It worked on the most difficult stage, the most improbable stage that it could have worked at. The experiment was proven. Now we're seeing the reaction. It's interesting because in a pretty short succession in the last week, we've had Jordan Spieth come out and not cast doubt on Bryson's process, but say it's impressive. Say that it's something that the tour pros should probably look into. And then Justin Thomas has kind of said that they're as much in awe of what Bryson's done as the fans are, as we are here on our, you know, on our sofas. And Rory, you know, it's interesting. He's, you know, our modern version of Iron Byron's. He's got great hips. He's got great body movement. He's in a perfect physical specimen in terms of his fitness. He's a guy that could try to make a few tweaks with speed and see where it takes him. At some point, guys are going to try and have some success, and it just won't be sustainable. I mean, we're not robots. We're not machines. These guys are the peak athletes. It's amazing to see. Maybe you can push tempo. You can push speed and sort of change that dynamic. I mean, it's been done in baseball. It's been done in other fast twitch sports. And I've had people contend that golf is indeed a fast twitch sport. Who's to say the old ratio that we've taught for years can't be tweaked and can't be sustained by, you know, perfectly trained or extremely well-trained athletes.
Okay, but here's my question then, Carl, because I think this is probably the biggest question that I have when it comes to this that I have had since day one when this all started. What is the long-term health of Bryson DeChambeau? I don't even think I worry as much about things breaking down the way other people do. I worry about his back. I mean, I think in the end, the back is in golf for most people ends up being where the struggle is because of the twists and turns you make. I'm just curious. I don't know. I mean, maybe his training and his workout regimen and what he's done with his body, maybe all of that prevents it. I don't know. I I'm not a physical fitness expert. I don't know. But when we saw Tiger breakdown, when we saw, you know, these guys that, that they do this every day for 40 years, you know, at what point, and again, it may not be for another 10 years for Bryson, but what's your expectation? Do you have any expectation for how long it takes him to go through something with the way he swings?
Golf isn't usually about that inevitability of breakdown. We look at NFL running backs that way. We look at other athletes in terms of wear and tear. We don't usually associate that with golf, but you make a great point about Tiger. You make a great point about guys that have gone hard in the past. I mean, Bill Glasson did it with bodybuilding, and it wasn't sustainable in terms of injury. I think that was a neck or shoulder. But I think it's one thing you've got to worry about because he's put weight on his bones and joints, which means and he's moving at a rapid rate. It doesn't look as stressful as some other swings. I would almost have more concerns about a Dustin Johnson's back. Again, I'm not an expert. I mean, I shouldn't even step out there enter the arena. Though, but right? I mean, just the eye test, right? I mean, just from the cheap seats, it looks more straining and potentially stressful to have Dustin swing than it does that simple movement that Bryson makes. But it is happening more. Bryson's move in the last year has become more violent. It's become more quick. Again, it's not just that will balls start to go errant at some point if we get out of sequence or out of timing. What is the sustainability of this body experiment that he's done? I think that's one of the things we don't know. And again, we never wish breakdown on anybody,
but I think that's the whole point in this is we could have this conversation and it means nothing in a lot of ways because there's no, just in the sense of there's no precedent for it. This is never, we've never seen guys do this. We've seen them become athletes more than they were in the 80s. We've seen them, you know, turn their bodies into something different. And sometimes it can be something freak. It's not like this is it's golf only and that's it. But I just wonder, it could go the other way too, where his body holds up longer than anybody else's. So I'm not trying to make that point. I just, you never know.
His plan, and he's sticking to it, is to live well past 100. What, did he say 150 or 100? He had some not even an even number.
He might do it. I'll tell you who I look at for that, Carl. I look at Tom Brady. Tom Brady changed his diet and made it this green, you know, whole deal with all these, you know, basically plant type diet. He looks 10 years younger than he did 10 years ago.
Agreed.
It's unbelievable.
Agreed. Yeah, there's no question about it. You know, there's so much that can be done with nutrition and fitness. And just because Bryson looks stockier than he did before, who are we to say that he's not healthier than he was a year ago? I mean, it doesn't sound on paper like it's the most sustainable thing. At some point, there's got to be a maintenance part to this, and the diet probably does need to go a little greener at some point. But right now it's working. I mean, I'm still in the fascination stage. I mean, he's hitting balls on the range and clocking cars. I mean, it's every week there's a Bryson DeChambeau feat of strength or, you know, something is added on to the lore of this guy. And we're creeping up on the Masters. We're a month out from the Masters now, a little less than, and he's a prohibitive favorite. He might just be the outright favorite at this point. If that ball's flying straight, because we know it's flying far.
That's what Jordan Spieth said. He said Bryson's got to be the favorite because of the way he hits the ball. He's going to do something to the Masters that's never been done before.
And for Bryson, it's going to be a lot about – yeah, it's going to be a lot about course setup. You talk about those openings and alleyways that were kind of constructed for spectator movement and things like that. He pointed to 9 because, yeah, you can go over the trees conceivably, or you can hit it in 8 fairway and have a shot sometimes. I don't know if you can have a shot from 1 fairway, but that's what, you know, if you hook it left or whatever. But on 8, you could still get there. There's a couple of spots out there where length really, really does have – I mean, can he hook it on 13 and leave it wedge like Tiger used to back before they changed the golf course? It's going to be fascinating. I mean, he's not going to be the only one that makes it fascinating, but – you look at what he can do with the ball, and it's just that we don't usually see that. We don't usually see somebody that much longer than everybody else and taking full advantage of it. It's just going to be interesting, and it's either going to be a bunch of success and we're going to be in awe of it, or it's going to be a huge train wreck and we're going to be fascinated by it.
In awe of it.
It's I love that he's gotten this far with it. And again, it's about setups a lot with Bryson. Augusta bodes well. Somebody brought up, you know, the Tillinghast design without bunkers in front of the greens was good for Bryson for this. I look at a course like Shinnecock where the rough is more wiry. The fairways are just as thin, but there's just no chop. I mean, I don't care if you've got a chainsaw or a lob wedge or versus the other guy having seven iron. It's just very difficult to get out of certain setups in terms of how deep the rough is. So it's, you know, let's watch him play an Open Championship like this with old school, you know, centuries old Gorse out there. We'll see. Again, not rooting against him. I love it. I want to see how far this goes.
I think we're all excited to see where it goes, no doubt about that. Well, coming up, we have a pretty special segment next segment. We're going to welcome in Chip Gist, the general manager over at Lost Creek, and Greg Walling, who are the two captains for this year's 2020 Hannon Cup, which is coming up October 26th and 27th. And the duo are the captains of their teams. They've got some loaded teams this year. We're going to take you through the Hannon Cup itself, what it means, and who their rosters are this year with some pretty spectacular Austin golfers. So we look forward to having Chip and Greg on. That's coming up next. You're listening to Playing Through on the Horn.
You're playing slow, so we're playing through. Hosted by Bob Ballew and Carl Mickelson. Brought to you by the PGA Tour Superstore.
All right, another good Saturday morning to you, Austin, Texas. Welcome back inside Playing Through. I'm Bob Ballew alongside Carl Mickelson, and we have two very special guests on our show this morning. This is Carl and I, a few months ago, played in the Hannon Pro-Am and came back on the show and told you guys how terrible we played and how we were never in contention and all the faults that we have in our game. So we thought instead of all of the faults, maybe it'd be a good idea to hear from some of the best players in Austin as the Hannon Cup itself is coming up October 26th and 27th, which is going to be a lot of fun next weekend. So it's out at Lost Creek Country Club, and so we're going to bring in the two guys who are making all this happen this year, who put these teams together and who are ready to roll. We welcome in Chip Gist and Greg Walling. Chip's the GM over there at Lost Creek, and Greg just kind of runs the city for Moreland. So we're very excited to have both of you guys on. And Chip, I'll just start with you and your team, because this is you've got some talent this year. And let me start with this too before we get into this. For those of you that don't know, the Hannon Cup, of course, honors former UT head golf coach, Coach George Hannon, and was created back in 1997. Mark Cowher and Brent Buckman essential in making all this happen. And it's 14 players on each team. It's a three-day event, 18-hole match play matches. It's just like the Ryder Cup, except it's not 36 a day. It's 18 a day for three straight days. And it's the top golf pros in Austin, golf professionals. And then the other team is the amateurs. And the really fun part of this is, for the amateurs at least, is they're on a four-year run right now of taking it to the pros. The last 2 years, it's been 22-10. So that's where Chip comes in as the big guru for this year. So Chip, let's talk about your team, how loaded you are, and your expectations as you head into another Hannon Cup.
Well, first of all, Bob and Carl, thanks for having us. We appreciate you promoting the Hannon Cup and the Hannon Society. It is true that the pro team has taken it on the chin the last couple of years, but, you know, really these amateurs play golf 5-6 days a week, and the working class golf professional maybe plays once every other week. So it's really tough for to compete sometimes. But sometimes this year the talent is going to rise to the top, I have no doubt. We've got a great lineup of golf professionals, and you know, we'll just be we'll be out there one shot at a time, as they say. And I know Captain Walling is put together a great team as well, but I like our chances right now.
Now, Chip, you look at your team and you say you've got this great loaded team. You've got Ryan Hodge, who's the head pro out at Twin Creeks, where I'm a member. Steve Tremere out at UT Golf Club, obviously, and his son Taylor are going to be on the team this year. But the top two guys on that roster you sent and that are put out for your team are pretty special players. So let's dive into that a little bit. How did you get those two guys on board with you?
Well, two reasons. One, we're talking about Mark Brooks, PGA champion Mark Brooks, longtime Longhorn, lifetime Longhorn. And, you know, after you lose three, I think it's just three, Bob. Now, let's don't sell the ranch yet. I think it's just three. But when that happens, you gotta call out, pull all the stops, right? And Mark has a special bond with the University of Texas and Coach Hannon. So being a Fort Worth guy, he's close by, and I have to say he's been a champ all the way. As soon as we invited him, he said, absolutely, I'll be there. Just tell me when and where to tee it up. So, you know, this Hannon Cup is important, and he has proven over the years that can stand up to the pressure, and I'm sure he'll bring not only a great competitive nature, but he'll pick up the other guys too, because whoever gets to play next to him is going to know who they're playing against. And then we got Taylor Tremere, who Steve's son, who's been out there trying to make it on the pro tours, on the mini tours. And he's got his best game is good enough. It's just not good enough every day. And that's easily said. So we're looking for – it'll be really fun to have somebody like Taylor who can absolutely light it up, be on our team.
That's very well said. We welcome in Greg Walling too as well. And Greg, tell us a little bit about your team, how you put it together, and what you're looking forward to most as you guys try to take down the professionals again.
Well, you know, I brought in a young bunch. I wasn't quite sure who Chip was going to have. There were some rumors of some other tour players that he was trying to fly in, so I had to dig deep for a young batch of guys. But no, it's kind of funny. We've got a lot of people that have had Lost Creek experience. So pretty excited about that. You know, I grew up
like playing the Westlake High School team from the last 10 years, it looks like to me.
Yeah, exactly. So I grew up in Westlake and have a pretty good roster of guys that have been around there a few times. So that should be fun. You know, talking about Taylor, who is a great player, we've got Brendan Redfern, who was the ball around on the professional tours and is now back in Austin. And his brother texted me, this was like in June, and just said, hey, my brother's got his amateur status back. So he pretty much went to the top of the list real quick. But his dad, Ken Redfern, actually won an award that the Hannon Society gave him, kind of a lifetime achievement award, so to speak. So it's nice to have him a part of it. But yeah, we got a good, great group, some old club pros that we've all worked with, to just a young batch of junior guys that grew up in Austin and played junior golf. You know, the goal was to grow this Hannon Society. We've got a lot of names that have been here for years and years and years, but this is a new batch. So I think it'll be fun to introduce the competition to the next generation, so to speak.
That is one of the great things about the Hannon Cup, and you're really seeing it in the rosters this year. You've got players that actually were coached by Coach Hannon. You've got Steve and Taylor Tremere, father, son. So it speaks to what the society has done and the generations that it's touching and crossing all the way to the young guys you're talking about. What an impact that the society has had and this group of people that brings together and promotes the game. It's just says a lot about the quality of people and the quality of the event that, you know, you're trying to beat each other's brains out, but at the end of the day, it really promotes golf in a pleasing and interesting way.
For sure.
Yeah. Chip, talk about one thing. You're pulling double duty in a sense. You're the captain of the pro team. You're also setting up the golf course because it's out there at Lost Creek. This year's Hannon Cup is in your backyard. Any insight to how you're going to play that to your advantage?
Well, first of all, it started yesterday when Captain Walling called asking for practice rounds for his guys, which there's no chance of that. So they can all just work from memory, I guess.
The T book fills up real quick, doesn't it?
No, mm-hmm. No doubt.
I think they've all bugged you already. It sounded like a few of them had already reached out.
Yeah. It's fine. You know, Lost Creek Golf Course, built in 1972, is just a classic style golf course. So it's not tricky. It's in front of you. And quite honestly, you know, these guys that are playing in this event, they can all take it deep with between, you know, the athleticism now and the equipment. This course is, you know, from the back tees, the cup's still the same size, but it's quite a bit shorter than it has been. So this is going to be a birdie fest is what it's going to be. And I think we'll make more birdies than they do. And but there's going to be a lot of them out there. It'll be really, really fun. Most of my guys hit it left to right, so the pins will be on the right part of the greens. Greg's got a bunch of hookers on his, so, you know, they'll have longer putts than we do.
I like it. I like the way you're setting that up. That's perfect. Greg, I, as I look at your team, it's fun to see some of the names who are just synonymous with Austin Golf, synonymous with the Austin area, which is the bigger part of this. And as Carl talked a little bit about, I mean, this is a special event for a lot of reasons. But when you look at your roster and you see Michael Cooper, who's obviously done a million things in Austin Golf, I go down to number of Jay Reynolds. I mean, you can go up and down the list, but I go to number 11. I don't know if I realized how good a golfer Drew Stubbs is.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So he's a scratch player and was a, you know, when I called, I've had a few people say, hey, who should I invite and who would be a good fit for the program? And I got his name by two or three different people. And so when I called him, he was fired up. So I think he just had a baby, but he's already got it worked into his practice schedule. I gave him enough heads up that she gave him the hall pass to skate for a couple of days. But no, I mean, I hear he hits it a long ways. You know, the thing with Lost Creek is, you know, as long as you could hit it, it's all a matter of putting and chipping around those greens. So, but it'll be fun. I think a match play course at Lost Creek with some big guys that can crush it and then those that can kind of put it in the fairway, I think it'll be a fun blend. But yeah, Drew's pretty excited. This will be, you know, if anybody can hit a major league fastball, I think he can tee it up against the one of the club pros for sure.
Well, and I'd imagine nerves probably won't be a big thing with him either, because if you face the guys he's faced and
yes,
gone up and done what he's done, you don't have to worry about that.
He'll be a tad out of his element. I mean, we're not playing baseball; we're gonna play golf.
That's all right. Bring it.
I love this. We need more of this trash talking. Chip, did you? I mean, obviously, I know some of these guys can hit it a long way, but did you design your team around anything specific? Were you trying to maybe not find the longest hitters, but guys who have great wedge games? Like, what was your plan as you were, you know, trying to figure out this team?
Well, it's a great question, Bob. One of the things I wanted to accomplish with this team is it just in Coach Hannon's honor, we'd like to have as many Longhorns involved as we possibly can. And secondly, we'd like to have, you know, as Greg's done an amazing job with a, you know, sort of a new generation for this event, which will guarantee its significance and relevance for time to come. And I try to do some of that myself. We've got, you know, obviously Mark Brooks is a senior player, but with Taylor and people like Gilbert Mendez, who is our Southern Texas PGA championship or champion, and he works at Golf Tech down there in Westlake. And, you know, he's never played before. He doesn't even know what this event is. So, and one of the best players in our area. So I tried to build not only older players, but younger players as well, somewhat what Greg did, because the matches are really important, but the society is even more important.
No question about that. I hate to do this to you, Chip. I know you weren't on the team in 2018, but Bob touched on it when he said a set of numbers there that were 22-10. I know Steve Tremere was on that team, Chris DeCaratry, Ryan Hodge. This show's been on long enough that my game is all about humiliations. What is that like? when nothing's going your way, and I know it led us to change the eligibility here with the Hannon Cup, and now we've got some more tour players on the pro roster. But man, what's it like in the dust storm when
it sucks. I mean, that's all there is to it.
You look at these are great. These are really good players. I mean, you Rufus Brehalba's played tour events. It's not like David Von Hoffman has had some cups of coffee at tour events as well. I mean, these aren't guys that are just out there, like, as you mentioned, playing once a month. Some of these guys are really good. It speaks to the quality of amateur golf in Central Texas. You and I talked about that off air. It just gets better and better as we go. And I think that's a lot of what we're looking at.
Well, let's credit some of these golf pros for bringing these amateurs up and teaching them how to play, right? I mean,
truth.
That's the fact of the matter. And that sort of environment breeds success. Look at Westlake High School and Lake Travis High School. Who's coming out of there in the last 10 years? There's not two better high school programs in the country than those two. You could say football, golf, and several others, but it's particularly golf. And so I know I'm sidestepping that question, and I mean to be, but we've all watched enough Ryder Cup as well. Momentum is a heck of a thing. And when it gets going, it's tough to turn around. And in our matches, I can tell you, we're going to do a little better job of communicating from match to match. So everybody knows where the team stands instead of just themselves. Because I know in the last couple of years, people didn't know exactly where they stood. Should they feel any different? Probably not. Do they? Right. Yes. So I would say momentum can really get going. And you're, as you said, the talent level on both sides is the same, you know, except for my team this year. But the talent level is the same.
I do think the one thing to make sure everyone understands is when you go into a Hannon Cup and when this is all over, it's all on the captain. It has nothing to do with the players and how they play. It's everything in the end falls back to the captain and how they prepared their team. I do want to have a little personal moment for me because I'm good friends with Brett Darter. So I do kind of want to have each of you guys. Brett is a member out at Twin Creeks and just won the Twin Creeks Club Championship by 19 shots, finished at 7 under, and second place was 12 over. I have to imagine that played somewhat in the role of you getting him on your squad, Greg. But what was it about Brett that you know made you want to get him on your team? And Chip, you obviously have a little revenge coming for Brett too.
Yeah. I've known Brett since I was in high school. I think my first round of golf at Lost Creek was Brett. I think I was like a freshman and he may have been a senior, but we've known each other for a long time. And when I was thinking about bringing on new blood to the Hannon Society, you know, he'd probably been a part of this when we were working at Barton Creek but hadn't had a chance to play, and thinking about again Lost Creek and Brett's game. And then of course I think I saw on Facebook that he'd won the club championship. So it was kind of like a perfect storm. A good friend of mine who's on the team, Johnny Makovic, he and Brett played in a one day member guest. And I think they shot 62 or 61 or something like that. So a best ball. So anyway, it was just kind of, Johnny and I were talking about it and Brett's name came up. So I'm pretty fired up to have him a part of this. He loves to talk a little bit too, which is kind of nice. And I think he's got a short memory. So hopefully that's a good thing for us.
And Chip, you know a little bit about him, right?
Oh, I mean, I raised him. I've hired him 3 times, and you know, I don't know if that was smart or not, but you know what Brett Darter brings to every table is, you know, he's going to bring swag, and he's not afraid for sure. And I don't know if that's just confidence or denseness. I'm not sure which one it is. A little of both, probably. But I know that if Darter wasn't on his team, I'd take him on my team because he's just a good guy to have in your foxhole.
And listen, there's not a couch in Austin he hadn't slept on. Somehow he ends up his night. There's member guests at my house a few years ago. I think everybody has some kind of Darter story. So that'll be a lot of fun. Carl, go ahead. I know you probably have some personal preference here too. I try not to bring up too much personal stuff, but I had to get a word in there for my guy, Brett.
Oh, that's fantastic. You know, I think this is just really evenly matched. I mean, if you look at it, yes, we're stacking some guys that have played on tour, but it's just interesting. I mean, how do you guys handicap each other looking at these rosters right now? I mean, it looks dead even to me, but it's what are the X factors in this event?
Go ahead, Greg.
Well, I think it's going to be, you know, you look at the amateur side and there's a lot of pairings that kind of line up really well. And some of these guys have all played a lot of golf together. So I think there's going to be some comfortable pairings on our side for sure. Mm-hmm. I think the singles matches will be awesome. I mean, the idea of getting some of these guys paired up against, you know, the Taylors of the world and the Mark Brooks and the Omar Uresti who is on there. I mean, like just that group, it'll just be fun to see how some of these young guys compete against, some of those young assistant pros and head pros, but also some of the guys like, you know, the Omars and the Marks of the world. It'll be fun to see.
You know, we talked about the golf course again, Lost Creek. When you look at the way things are going in amateur golf and obviously in professional golf, everybody's hitting it farther. A lot of these guys on this list, Drew Stubbs included, are hitting the ball a long way. Chip, Lost Creek kind of takes a lot of that advantage out of play for the bigger guys. Is that perception true in terms of the way you think it could be set up? I mean, Lost Creek can play long, but not, you know, big city long.
Let's say that strategically, it may not be to their advantage to hit driver off every par four.
Well said.
Probably on the par fives, but maybe not on all the par fours. And there is some penalty. It does get tighter, you know, within 50 yards of these greens, and that will come into factor. I think you're right. These teams are evenly matched at the end of the day. The pairings will probably have a lot to do with what happens. And, you know, Greg's going to do a good job and on some of them, and he's going to miss a couple, and I'm going to do the same thing. So it's just a matter of how we put these folks together, and they generally don't play together. I mean, especially my side, his side probably plays more golf together than my side plays. But you know, some of that is just raw. You know, we're going to figure out a way to pair them. And we're going to make some good choices and we're going to make some bad choices. And whoever makes the least bad choices is going to win.
Okay, I'm going to put you guys on the spot as we wrap this up. And I know you don't want to give away too much strategy. I understand that. But I do want to know if you could put one player on the course with an even match to win the whole thing, who would you want?
That's a good question.
Dead silence, Carl. I don't know if you noticed that. There was just dead silence. And that
we've all been there.
Well, that speaks to the rosters because it's going to be hard to just take one guy and say, this is my guy, this is who I want. But you guys have a feeling, you're captains. You guys kind of know your roster.
Yeah, it's interesting. On my side, some that
Greg wanted to wait to hear what you were going to say, I think.
I'd like to see from experience in this event. Greg, yours don't have a ton of experience in this event, but I've got some guys who don't have any experience in this event either. So we can't rely just on records. But I'd take the O-man. If I gotta lay it on the line, he's made a lot of points all over the place. He's used to the heat. I'd take the O-man.
I just kind of glanced at it again. I mean, there's so many good players on our roster. I mean, I'm sure they could all handle it. But I would probably say, I mean, Michael Cooper, you know, has played in this thing a bunch. He kind of knows the drill. He'd be a pretty comfortable guy. And then I think, you know, I guess, you know, like going back to the darter thing, I mean, that guy, he's got a real short memory and loves golf and loves to compete. So
you got a Lost Creek Club champion. Hey, you got a Lost Creek Club champion.
That's right.
Who won the tournament on 18 as well. So
yeah, I heard about that. Yep. Matt Smith. So we got, we'll have him, hopefully he'll share some wisdom with the boys.
Yeah.
Hey Greg, personally for you as a top ranked amateur, you get to play in a lot of great events and do a lot of cool things. Where's being a part of this event rank and all of that for you?
Well, I mean, Coach Hannon's the reason why we're here. I got to spend 20 years with him, and he and his wife, Joe, and they were like grandparents to me. And so it's all about him and, you know, carrying on his legacy and their legacy, really, because there wouldn't be Coach without Joe. So they're just, you know, some of my favorite people in the world, and sad that they're not with us, but we got to spend a lot of time with them, and I'm sure he's thrilled to have this carry on and keep his name out there for junior golf. Cause you know, there is a kind of passing of the guard, so to speak. I mean, these guys, you know, been around for 20 years, but now we're kind of, we want to make sure they know who Coach is, you know? So I think this will be, it's just super fun. And then having it at Lost Creek, I mean, 5 minutes from my house in a place I grew up, it's going to be a lot of fun.
How about for you, Chip?
I'm one of those older guys, I think, that Greg was just talking about. Yeah. I got to play in 1997, I think, or 98. It was the first time I got to play in this event. And I captained in the early 2000s as well. So it's I moved away from the golf scene for a little while, and it's so great. I'm so appreciative to be back. And Steve Tremere, who's done just an amazing job being the executive director of this whole society, and he's really the glue of the whole thing. I'm appreciative of that. And I have to say, echo what Greg said with, you know, it's all about Coach, and he taught all of us so much from a golf professional standpoint. You know, every time I run a golf tournament, or every time I'm involved with a golf tournament, or I'm on the golf course, it does not fail. I will hear his voice in my ear saying something that was important to him. And it was all about being in the process for him. And, you know, so passing on that legacy is really important to all of us.
Well, this whole event is important to everyone in Austin that is involved in the game of golf. And I know that there are a lot of people that want to be a part of these rosters, and it's pretty special to get the 14 guys that you get every year. And we certainly more than anything appreciate you two coming on with us and discussing not just the Hannon Cup, but Coach Hannon and what he meant to you as well. And we wish you the best of luck, and we might have to have the winner on to talk about how you did it sometime in the next few weeks.
Bob, Carl, thanks so much for having us.
Best of luck, gentlemen.
Yeah, come out and see us.
Yeah, so it's out at Lost Creek. Again, October 26th and 27th out at Lost Creek. We hope you guys can make it out and see it. All right, Carl and I will finish up the show with a little bit of interesting news about course attire. We'll talk about that when we come back. You're listening to Playing Through on the Horn. All right, final segment of Playing Through on the Horn. Really, really fun segment there with Greg and Chip about the Hannon Cup, and really looking forward to see how that turns out, because that's going to be a lot of fun here in about a week and a half to hear how these guys play everything out. I did mention right before we went to break the dress attire, and Carl, I want to get your thoughts on this. There was a guy who came out and said that he was playing golf. He had on black socks and black shoes, and he was playing at Sydney Golf Club in Australia. Mm-hmm. And they told him he had to wear white socks and white shoes to play. I wanted to get your take. Is this a ridiculous thing for the club, or is it something that is good for golf? They do not allow you to wear black socks and black shoes.
I don't know the history or the rationale. I think it's really bizarre. I like black socks, black shoes. I really, for whatever reason, dislike white socks, black shoes. Now, that's just a personal preference thing. I don't know the style rules. I don't know any of the politics behind it, why it's a problem. But I'm someone who just deliberately bought gray socks because I've got gray Echo shoes that go with them. So I don't know. I mean, I hope I'm not kicked off a course for that.
I think the only argument for it is that it's a rule at a club. And when you go to a club to play golf, you got to follow their rules. It's just
arbitrary. You know, it's funny.
It absolutely is.
Back when malls were a thing, I dated a girl and we would play this game. And we lived in Houston. We would go to the Galleria, which attracted a big international crowd because it was, you know, Houston's an international city, and that people would go and buy things. And the mall was part of the culture. And I would say, okay, I'm going to guess which one's European, and then we're going to walk, we're going to graze past them. We're going to walk up closely, and if they're speaking in a European accent, I win. And the, one of the telltale things I would look for is if it would be a guy in a suit or a guy dressed up, but he still had white socks, because that, for whatever reason, that was a nuance of European people. They would have these amazing, you know, fashionable suits on, but there would always be white socks underneath. And and she's like, how are you doing this? I never told her the white sock secret, but she's like, how did you know they'd have accents? We were 300 feet away and you knew, you know, I don't know what that, you made me think of that, black shoes, black socks.
I love it.
It's just so arbitrary. It's arbitrary as can be.
It is. I totally agree. All right, before we go, and this is real quick, but I don't have one thing that happened to me on the golf course because I haven't played in about a month. Been kind of staying home with the kids and hanging out here at the house with the wife and enjoying some time with the family. But I want to read you Jordan Spieth's quote. They're playing at Shadow Creek this week at the CJ Cup. And as we have about a minute to go on the show here, Carl, here's Jordan Spieth's quote. Spieth said he plays Shadow Creek. He's played Shadow Creek 6 times, and he still needed a refresher course on how to play it. Quote, normally you're on a trip to Vegas, and normally you're not in the right frame of mind to be remembering all the holes.
That's refreshing to hear from a tour player, right? I mean, you know, we worry about Jordan and where his game is and where it might be going. I don't worry about Jordan Spieth as a person, though. That's what a 20-something golfer should – when he's playing golf in Vegas at Shadow Creek, that's exactly the frame of mind I hope he has.
It's pretty good. I think we all love that as people who have been to Vegas and seen what goes on there and what stays there when it's supposed to stay there. That's a fun quote from Jordan, and hopefully Jordan's game is going to flip here sometime soon. Well, listen, really fun show. Enjoyed the long conversation with Chip and Greg. As we get ready for the Hannon Cup here in 9 days, and Carl, look forward to talking to you again next week.
More to talk about next week. We're sneaking up on the Masters. It's going to be fun for a while.
Absolutely. Weird. Masters in November, come out of like Alabama LSU and go into the Masters, come out of the Masters and go into Alabama LSU. It's going to be really bizarre. But that's very where much. We are. And it's going to be fun for 1 year, if nothing else. All right, thank you for listening to us. As always, he is Carl Nicholson. I'm Bob Ballou. This is Playing Through on the Horn. Go out and make a bunch of birdies, everyone.